Okay, we're going to get started today, and what we're talking about at this point in time relates to students and student involvement on our campuses. And I want to introduce the three panelists and then allow them to spend 5 to 7 minutes discussing a few things, and then we will open things up and you can ask questions as you might like. So I'm going to begin with Dr. Beth Boehm from the University of Louisville. And she is an executive vice president and university provost at that university. She originally started as an assistant professor of English. She's also served as dean of the School of Interdisciplinary and Graduate Studies. And in her role right now, she is responsible for setting the course of her university by collaborating with students, faculty, and staff. And she's charged with keeping her university on course, which I think is major responsibility, and certainly very important in her office. She has received a variety of awards, and I just want to mention those because I think awards show us how important someone is in a university setting. So she's received the College of Arts and Sciences Distinguished Teaching Award, was selected for the University Distinguished Teaching Professor, and she was awarded the Distinguished Service Award by her college and university. So her research has involved grad education, including mentoring, reimagining the dissertation, which I think is extremely important. I would love to do that in my college. Community engagement in graduate education, and then holistic admissions. So she is immediately to my left. And then in the middle, Ryan McBride from Tulane University is an administrative associate professor with the English Department and the Center for Public Service. And he has done a lot of work with community-engaged public scholarship. And if you read his thought piece, it has some very interesting information on that particular topic. He's done a lot of work with interdisciplinary certificate programs, has focused on graduate students in the humanities specifically, and then working in community settings, and has set up a kind of program that involves a multifaceted two-year cohort experience, which I think is very interesting. And then on the far end, Molly McCarthy, who comes from the University of California, Davis. And she is an associate director of the UC Davis Humanities Institute, where graduate education and mentoring have been a key part of that institution's programming. She has done a lot of work in the area of tailoring career mentoring for graduate students in the arts, humanities, and social sciences. She's launched something very interesting program called PhD Unlimited. It's a professional development workshop that's aimed at helping students find meaningful careers. And additionally, she oversees the Mellon Public Scholars Program. And that program, I think, is incredibly effective. She's done a lot of work to integrate faculty into programs and then champion public scholarship. Very, very important in terms of what we do with students on our campuses. So I am going to open things up to Dr. Boehm and let her begin.
Hi, everybody. I have a handout. Do you all have that handout? There are actually two handouts that I gave Aiden to pass out. Did Aiden disappear with my handout? I guess he did. Well, anyway, you can get them at some point. And what they do, there he is. Woo! On cue. They are lists of small programs that we have developed at the University of Louisville. Here's the one on mentoring. And I'm going to talk a little bit about mentoring and community engagement. Those were my two code words for this session. For mentoring, we did a whole lot of things when I first started at the graduate school, including one of the very fun things that they want to do again this year, which is we called it a mentoring kickoff. We had our MFA students in theater arts come and enact some scenes that were written by graduate students about their mentoring moments that had gone bad. There were an amazing number of people who submitted these for us. kind of depressing, but what was fun about this event was that the students that who wrote them didn't have to act them. We had actual acting students do them. And we also had acting students playing the professors in these moments. And then what occurred was we allowed the people who were in the audience, which were both graduate students and faculty mentors, come up and tap an actor on the shoulder, and then they would redo the scene with somebody else saying, well, the professor really would have said this, right? You know what I mean? And so they were very fun and illuminating, and it was a great way to kick off a year focused on mentoring. So out of that, several things happened. We started in the grad school to give an award every year for the outstanding mentor, both of a master's student and of a PhD student. And then we also started an award for the outstanding director of graduate studies. All right, so those things were ways of saying this matters to us, this work matters. From that, the outstanding mentors became part of a mentoring advisory board that's grown, obviously. So I started that award in 2010, I think, and so it now has multiple people on it. And from that, we created a mentor center, which was a web-based site that has a lot of articles about mentoring, both for grad students and for mentors, all right, so that they're resources that they can look at. The other piece is there's you can contact a mentor, right, outside of your own mentor. So you can all these advisory folks were willing to serve as electronic mentors to people, right? So that people can send questions in. And it's interesting because one of the mentors, I don't know how he does it, but he has lots of students asking him questions. He's in the sciences, actually, not in the humanities. Some of the other folks have fewer asking them questions. Probably we get maybe 30 questions a year. So it's not a huge burden on anyone. But it's enough that students feel there is some other place to go outside of their own mentor in their own department when they want to ask a question. Should this happen is a lot of the questions, right? Because students don't really know what a mentor should do. And so they are often asking, my mentor did this. Is this okay? Right? And so I think that's important that they have a place to go for that. The other thing we did, we had DGS reading groups. We do this every other year about on different areas, and we started with DGS readings about mentoring. And then we had a learning community of faculty and graduate students reading about mentoring. And out of both of these groups, we had a series of resources developed. So that's sort of the and the other big thing we did was a peer mentoring push, because we had about 4 or 5 peer mentoring programs that were pretty developed across the whole institution. And we did a push to try to get grad students to take this on in their own units and or their own departments. And so now I think we have 15 different peer mentoring groups. And the faculty love it. They didn't like it, the idea at first, because they said, one faculty member actually said to me, we don't want our graduate students talking to each other. And you all know that kind of faculty member because you have them on your own campuses. But what's been useful is that they've been really good recruiting tools, right? You know, so happy grad students are likely to encourage other grad students to come. We try to suggest that this means you should make all your grad students happier than they are, because then they'll be better ambassadors for you. But also the students who are doing the mentoring really like it. They enjoy being paired with a first-year student, helping that first-year student navigate some of the tricks. And, you know, there are things that happen where somebody, you know, there's a faculty member who's very difficult. Students will talk to them and say, I would not take that class my first semester. Or, you know, and so some of the faculty aren't crazy about that. Then I'm like, well, you know, that's your reputation. So live with it. Change it or live with it. The other thing that we developed, I think in 2014 we began it, was a more focused a greater focus on diversity retention and mentoring of our diverse students. And I hired a director of recruitment and retention for diverse students, and she created a check-in and connect program that created cohorts from all the programs, cohorts of diverse students, so that they might be, there might be some biomedical students. There might not be enough in any one program to create a cohort, but we have plenty of diversity across those programs. And so she would bring them together, and she met with them annually, or not annually, every semester, twice a semester, one-on-one, and then she also met with them monthly as a big group. And they got to see that, one, the problems they were having were not unique to them, they were not aimed at them because they were diverse students, that they were problems of being graduate students in general sometimes. And then we had some trouble spots where we actually then could go in and do it because we were hearing about issues where the, you know, inclusion was not a big value in a particular program, for instance. And then we could go in and do some actual diversity training in those programs. But we would not have known about that had the students not been brought together and felt comfortable talking about some of those issues. So that has been really big. And I'll tell you the reason I did it. The first few years we had diversity fellowships, we lost like 40% of our diverse students after 2 years. And we have a model at the University of Louisville, because we're not very rich, of saying that the grad school supports the first 2 years and the program supports the second 2 years. It's a matching program. And then we would spend our money, and then the student would bomb out or not be helped to succeed, and the departments never had to spend their money, all right? And so we started this in order to stop that cycle, and so we lost about, you know, a large number, and we've lost one since 2014, all right? So that's evidence that this really has been helpful. Now, we just lost our diversity director, who's being paid twice as much to go to Purdue. And so we're looking for another one. But she, you know, and I hope it wasn't just the force of her personality that created that success, and that we can replicate it. So the other thing I've been, and I'll be quick, we talked about community engagement as one of my code words. And we created a community engagement academy 4 years ago that started as a co-curricular opportunity. Everything we do, the graduate school at U of L is called the School of Interdisciplinary and Graduate Studies. Last night I said it's got an unfortunate acronym of SIGS, which one of my colleagues said was appropriate for Kentucky. And we have a series of academies. We have a GTA academy, a grant writing academy, an entrepreneurship academy, a publishing academy, and a leadership academy that's just starting this year. The Community Engagement Academy kind of came out in the middle of those academies, and it was really intentionally an attempt to create opportunities for first-gen grad students, underrepresented grad students, and under-resourced grad students, because we have some fellowships that we directed to this program. It is not a credit-bearing program. It's a co-curricular program. It runs a whole year. We got community partners to work with us so that students don't have to go out and find a partner. Some students just want to see what this is, and so it's a mild commitment. You know, they might work on one small project. Some students are all in, and this becomes the basis of a dissertation for some students. And so And because community-engaged faculty tend to be very giving people, they did this out of their own hides for the most part. And I was really actively involved, and I think when they see that the dean was really actively involved, they're like, how can I say no? And so we all offered sessions. I think we offered 8 or 10 sessions. Different faculty took control of each of those sessions, but they all came to all the sessions, and so that the students felt there was this community of engaged scholars who would help them when they ran into problems. And so that has been a very successful model. And I will tell you that from that group, I have this alternative dissertation committee thing on the handout, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but from that group, there were about 5 of the faculty, or 6 of the faculty, and 6 students who wanted to meet more regularly outside of this, and we all had different projects. But we all met regularly. We talked. It included one of the community groups. The leader of that community group, who had a PhD in history, and now is running the Parklands. And he was really engaged in this. And we had a series, I think that group of maybe it was nine people all together, published 12 articles in 18 months. Pretty productive. Every student who was involved was part of at least one article. One student, my student, who was just tremendous, was part of four or five of them. And so it created this great place. We were doing public scholarship, but truly productive. And so from that came this whole idea of alternative dissertation committees. And we can talk about that later, but I think that'll take me to the end of my 7 minutes plus.
Okay, Dr. McBride.
Oh, yeah, I was looking at my code words here. One of which was service learning, and I guess I should speak into this, which I thought, oh, that's I don't really, and I'm not sure, but then I realized, oh, actually, I did kind of get into this through service learning. So I coach middle school debate, and I actually run a middle school debate league in New Orleans, and my students who take a classical rhetoric course with me are actually taught to coach, and so we coach directly in five schools, and we invite everybody in the city to come to our tournaments, and that's sort of how I got into this line of work. So I guess 6 years ago or so, they asked, and I actually helped to facilitate a faculty seminar on service learning. And so we've been thinking about culture change at the faculty level, at the university level. Like, all of these things really just fold into one another, and you realize, like, oh, this culture change requires a thoroughgoing revisioning of what it is that we're doing at the academy. So it folds right into this nicely. So when they asked me to run a graduate seminar on community engagement, I thought, oh yeah, why not? And I sort of thought of it as kind of like a graduate student version of the faculty seminar on service learning at first. The provost was nice enough to give us about $10,000, so we gave $2,000 stipends to five graduate students to make sure people would show up at least to these seminars, and we served lunch. But we found that at these meetings, we had actually 10 or 12 people who would just show up and regularly, and they were like, we're not getting stipends, we don't care. They wanted to be part of the conversation. A couple of the revelations I had was that one was that the level of sophistication of the graduate students was far, far higher than that of the faculty and the faculty seminars on service learning, with a few exceptions. And the graduate students also felt like outliers in their own departments, in their home departments. But coming together as a group was kind of a revelation for them, and I think they were elated to find others who were sort of outliers in their own programs. And this is something, this is, I think, an experience that many people are describing. And there's a way that they felt like their ideas and values were, in fact, valued in that seminar. But it was a sort of it was a seminar where we met once a week and had lunch, and then at the end of the spring, you would come up with a proposal for a kind of project, and then during the summer, you'd do a project, and during the fall, we'd talk about how those projects went. And so it was a great experience. Our kind of the motto was like, let this be an excuse to do something you really want to do. And because I think a lot of graduate students need that excuse, and this was it. And a lot of them really took it and ran with it. And I think that inspired the provost's office and us. And we thought, oh, well, this is something we should be doing more of. So it expanded. And after 3 years of that pilot program, we received a grant from the Mellon Foundation. And the grant instituted a steering committee, a faculty steering committee. And we were tasked with developing this pilot program into something more robust and something that had a graduate certificate attached to it. And so we now have a graduate certificate in community engaged scholarship. And so anyone who's ever been part of a faculty committee knows, like, that can be a challenge. And working with, you know, I developed the first thing on my own, but then and now I have this huge committee, and everybody has ideas about how it should go. Probably the best thing that we did with that committee was we invited graduate students to join that committee. And that really set things going nicely, because there was a lot of faculty who were saying, here's where we should go. And I would say, well, I don't think the graduate students would want that. And then the graduate students would hear what the faculty were saying, and they'd say, like, we think this is what we should do. And I'd say, well, the faculty aren't going to go for that. And so I was like, we need to be on the same committee. That set things going much better. And once we had a proposal put before the curriculum committee and before the faculty senate and for the graduate council, I was really heartened by the support that the members of that steering committee offered for the program. And I realized that I was kind of ambivalent about this idea of like a graduate certificate, because frankly, the graduate students don't really care. They're like, I'm getting a PhD. Who cares about a graduate certificate? I can just tell them what I did. So I was kind of like, do we really need to do this? But I realized that going through this process where I was working with directors of graduate study, with department chairs, with deans and provosts, it brought a lot of people on board, and it allowed people to understand what it is that we were doing. And frankly, they were advocating for it near the end. So this sort of like got us, it really pushed us forward institutionally. And that's a much better position to be in than the certain kind of position we were in initially. But what the graduate students really cared about was this community that we had sort of formed as in this initial pilot program. So we've kind of expanded on that. And one of the things that we've done is we've taken this kind of cohort model where we have the 12 graduate students, and we try to get them from a variety of departments, but we like to find some kinds of ways in which their interests overlap. And we have four faculty members who are doing like really amazing community engaged work on campus from a variety of positions. And we have four community leaders who are with us at for the, and so we have, and the, we had like 38 applicants from community leaders who are just like amazing. They've been running organizations for 25 years. They've had all kinds of partnerships. They just have vast experience. And so there, I mean, we're talking about mentorship. We found like we needed more mentorship and mentorship from perspectives from outside of the university to do this well. And it's hard to get those mentors. So we have those four community leaders, four faculty, and four graduate students. So it's a cohort of 20, and they're together for 2 years. And right now we have 40 people in the program, and we meet on Tuesday nights at 6:30. We have dinner, childcare is provided, and we all eat together, and then we break off into groups of five. We have three graduate students, a faculty member, and a community leader, and they conference for around an hour. And we have those monthly meetings, and those are really the kind of backbone of the whole program. I could talk more, and I have all these examples of graduate students who are just amazing, and I can talk to maybe what this program I think does that the pilot program couldn't. But I'll defer that to anyone who you can ask me if you're interested. But I'll pass the torch here too.
Okay, Dr. McCarthy.
Thanks, Ryan. I actually I am from the University of California, Davis. I'm going to focus my remarks today on our Mellon Public Scholars Program, which is our community engaged research program, training program for graduate students in the humanities, arts, and social sciences. I think my remarks will very much echo Ryan's in how we have used the program to make inroads, cultural inroads into departments and programs, and the way in which we've used a variety of methods, many of which you mentioned, to make champions, right? So of understanding how we're going to, this is just to briefly describe what the Mellon Public Scholars Program is at UC Davis. I invite you on your own devices to find our website. It's publicscholars.ucdavis.edu. You can actually look and see what kinds of wonderful projects our students are doing. We had, in 2015, a small grant, a three-year pilot program from Mellon. We invited 10 students in the humanities, arts, and social sciences we awarded them this fellowship, which required them to take a spring seminar that would acquaint them with the intellectual and logistical foundations of public scholarship. What is it, and how do we do it? At the same time, they were asked to create a community-engaged research project. Some of them came with their own community partners, and in, I believe it was year two, because we understood that for many students we had designed the program for, public engagement was very much a creative and intellectual leap that they really had a hard time conceiving. So how do I find a community organization? So to help the students along, we established, like an ACLS Public Fellows Program, we created established projects and partnered with the California Department of Education, for instance, on a new Native American Studies curriculum across the state of California, or the Yolo County Food Bank. So we had these established partnerships, and the students could actually apply for an open project and an established project and see how they did in the selection process. So they do that. They come together and form a nice cohort in the spring, and then they go off and do their research in the summer. So it was a really nice way to fit this program in with their graduate training. It didn't ask them for a year. It didn't ask them really to step out dramatically from their program, but we have found that students who are actually starting their programs, it's a really good fit because they can fit it into their coursework. It didn't feel like a dramatic or a huge distraction. This was an issue that came up last night about, well, how can I actually step out of our program? But one of the things that I think made our program such a success and has continued to make inroads is that we involve faculty at every step in the process. We design the program so the students are actually asked to select or identify, so they will have the mentorship at the community organization. Then there's an awful lot of mentoring that happens there during the summer. But they also have to identify, and we do a lot of this matchmaking ourselves, a faculty. We initially called it a mentor, a faculty mentor, whom they could rely upon. Some of these faculty members had experience doing public engagement. Some of them did not. And those who did not were amazed at what their students were doing. But we encouraged the students to actually choose. They became faculty partners, and I'll describe why it shifted from mentors to partners in a minute. But they chose a faculty. We encouraged them to choose a faculty partner who was not their advisor, who was outside their department. So it established a distributed mentoring network that I think we're all moving towards. We were able to bring faculty mentors into the projects, into the process. We established a faculty advisory board, and we also included our community partners in that faculty or in that advisory board. They actually select the applicants. They see what great projects are out there. We have really deep and intellectual discussions about what public scholarship is in different disciplines, and it's a really interesting process. And there's a continuing tension from between the social sciences and the humanities about who's more equipped to do this work and who can make the strongest case for an open project versus our humanists who are not accustomed to this work, but we're trying to give them a leg up. There's just a very, very interesting and ongoing tension between in our selection process about coming up with a really great cohort where peer mentoring can go on and the social scientists can kind of educate the humanists in the room, but we want a good mix. Getting faculty on the advisory board has helped us showcase the program to departments and programs across our division. We also have a faculty instructor that rotates and teaches the public seminar in the spring quarter. We have found that that has really been a wonderful way to reward our faculty who have been doing this work for so long but have not been recognized and not been supported in this work. And it's a really nice kind of recognition and celebration of that work. And our initial, we were just renewed by the Mellon Foundation for 3 more years, thank goodness. But we realized that in our initial pilot, we had not really figured out that we had set aside a small amount of money to give a faculty instructor as research funds, but they ended up having to teach that seminar as an overload. Right? And so it felt actually like we were asking many faculty to do this out of the goodness of their hearts, right? And they were overburdened as it was with service commitments. And so in the next iteration, we actually got enough funds to pay out that instructor, which is a huge and a very important institutional recognition of that work. The faculty partners, I'll go back to explaining why we had to move from a mentor, using the word mentor. Again, words are so important in this work. We ran, again, in our first iteration of the program, we could not get our academic affairs office to approve the $2,000 stipends that we had set out or set aside for our faculty mentors for this program because our Office of Academic Affairs said, they're already paid to advise. They're already paid to mentor. We're not going to pay them for something that they're already compensated for. And so we're like, well, we have to go back to the drawing board. We worked around our Office of Academic Affairs and decided that we would just pay them summer salary, and we have now called them partners in that research project. They are not mentors. They serve as mentors. They're really mentoring. They're working side by side with these students. But we couldn't call them mentors. So it's just very interesting the way in which the institutional barriers, you have to be creative, and the ways in which you reward faculty for this work. I think it's really encouraged more faculty to get involved. It's allowed the faculty to take all of these great stories, all of these great projects, this evidence back to their departments. It's really given them a much better sense of the program. You can't really tell them about it. You really actually have to show them. And I found that that including faculty at every step of the way has really then encouraged students in those programs to apply, because the faculty can actually tell them firsthand what it is and how they will benefit. It doesn't come without its challenges. I mentioned some of them last night. But the biggest one from where I sit is that this is a program that exists at the Humanities Institute. And it doesn't belong there, right? I mean, it's extracurricular. It's a signal that it's outside or extra departmental. In some ways, it serves the campus or the division very well, because students can kind of drop in and not feel like and can feel like it's open to them. We have to figure out where it lives, where it would sit, and if it were to sit in our grad group for cultural studies, would historians come? You know, would Lang Lit come? If we put it in Lang Lit, would the social scientists come? So it's a really hard and ongoing discussion about what we do, you know, and I agree with the we wouldn't have a certificate on our campus. It would be a designated emphasis. But I don't know whether that's the right solution. So it's something that we're giving a lot of deep thought to. But I've been so gratified both at the reaction and the enthusiasm from our students, but also the faculty. Just to tell one brief anecdote of a faculty member who, you know, had done some work, had been brought into the program to serve as a faculty partner, and was so inspired by the work that she was doing that she applied for the ACLA ALS Scholars in Society new fellowship, which would allow her to spend her own year at a community organization in the Bay Area, and we're awaiting word on whether or not she's, but the fact that she was interested in pursuing this kind of work for herself, I just found like a great example of the strides that we're making in culture change.
Thank you. Many thanks to each of our panelists.